Today we're going to be featuring something very, very interesting and uncommon. My name is Matthew Cumberledge with the Greene County Historical Society.
We actually walked past these a few times, then found them kind of buried in the dirt.
One of those graves is actually of great importance to Greene County.
Did a little bit of excavating with my hands. We've been photographing them so we can record them properly, and now they're preserved for posterity.
Greene County actually presents some things that are a bit unusual. What those things are these items which have not been seen really anywhere else outside of the county. And there are probably at least 10 to 20 reports just in Greene County alone. And these items, again, these are very, very rare, and you will not find these housed in any other collection in the state outside of Greene County, Pennsylvania.
Stop by anytime, see Matt, the director. He'll let you in, take a walk around, and we can do a personal tour. So have a good time.
And once again, I am Matthew Cumberledge with the Greene County Historical Society. Why is this stuff so interesting?
All right, welcome to this very special episode of the Allegheny History Podcast. We are in Waynesburg, but we're down here to talk with Matt Cumberledge, who is the new director of the Greene County Historical Society. And you are new, I mean, like the beginning of the year, right?
Yeah, January 8th.
Yeah. You getting used to it?
Yeah, slowly but surely. We kind of hit the ground running when we started here, so.
Yeah. So you've been here since January. You walked into the place and you said, okay, I'm here. I'm going to make this place shine, right? Is that what you did?
Basically, yeah.
Yeah.
When I take ownership of something, I take ownership of it.
Do you have a background in this?
Actually, I do not. I actually come from a military and corrections background.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of a switch, huh?
Yeah, quite a switch, actually. Quite a switch.
Yeah.
Yeah, infantry for several years. And then I was a CO at SCI Fayette outside of Brownsville. And ran our local union. So,
oh,
yeah, bit of a change of pace for me.
Wow. You know, I think that the possibilities there of someone who is coming in with fresh eyes, you know, not the background. So you can look at things fresh here at this very, very old institution.
Yes.
That you've taken the helm of. Now, this has been going on since 1925. Right?
Yes. We were founded in 1925.
Tell you what, I am blown away by the amount of stuff here, and certainly Matt's knowledge because he gave me a great tour. The amount of stuff here and the variety of stuff here is I've never seen in any other local historical museum. I'm looking at an old TV from 1948. I've never seen a TV from 1948. So here's what I'm looking at here. And just every room.
And we have the original plans that was made from.
Yes, the schematics, right?
Yes.
Now that's remarkable. And you do what a lot of museums do. You have these period rooms, mm-hmm. right? You want to talk a little bit about the rooms that you have?
Well, I'll give a little bit of a background of the history of the building so that kind of makes sense with what we do here.
Uh-huh.
This was the Greene County Poor Farm, but when it was initially built, it was a farmhouse. The family lived here for about 4 years before they moved west and the county bought the property and converted it into the poor farm. So we actually have the original house portion of the building we have set up as it would have looked like as a Victorian homestead in the, you know, 1850s, 1860s time frame. We have a music room, parlor, dining room, several bedrooms, and other little service and functional type rooms set up as well.
So this started as the farmhouse,
mm-hmm.
and then it was the poorhouse.
Yes.
And now it's a history museum.
Yes.
The history museum started in 1925.
Yes. Right?
But the farmhouse started it in when?
1857.
The grounds here, 17 acres.
Mm-hmm. Originally much larger.
Yeah, originally much larger. Yeah. A lot of different buildings here that are on the grounds, you know, in addition to the house. You want to talk a little bit about the different buildings that you have?
Yeah, our main building is 35,000 square feet, 52 rooms, 40 of which are open to the public. We also have a Pioneer Dog Trot log cabin in the back. We've got our original smokehouse, our original boiler house that's been converted to a library. We've got a large agricultural barn. We have our train building where we house our 1916 steam locomotive, and we have another small log cabin on the grounds as well.
Wow. So I can imagine it takes a real crew to keep everything up, right?
There's two of us.
No way.
Yeah, there's two
just
of us.
Just two?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm the executive director, and we have a caretaker, and we're the two. Everything else is entirely volunteer-driven.
That's amazing. How many volunteers do you have?
We have about 20 that we work with consistently, and many more on top of that, you know, their schedules dictate that they can't be here quite as much. And we also have lots and lots of students from the university, Waynesburg University here in town, that help out as well.
Oh, I'm sure that's a great asset too, you know, bringing the young folks in.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, we're a popular stop for the Bonner Scholars for their service projects out here.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
So that's sort of a feeder to you.
Wow. Yeah.
Well, take advantage of that, huh?
Oh, and they love it out here because, you know, we actually, instead of them going somewhere mowing grass or painting, we actually can provide them with more fun and interactive things to do. And I think they feel they're a part of the community here.
Yeah. Speaking of community, do you get a lot of locals to come by?
Oh, we do, actually. We get quite a lot of locals that come by, especially for our, we do lots of small, like, evening events and stuff like that, like our lecture series or special exhibits. We get a very, very good local turnout for those. And our regular admissions is probably split 50-50 between locals and people from out of state.
Do you have people from around the world stop by?
We haven't yet so far this year, but I'm sure we will.
Yeah. So I have to ask you this. It's very common for people in the communities to say, I never knew that place even existed. Do you have that reaction?
We used to. We've really tried to reinvent this place, remarket it, make it a place where the community can celebrate, because we have had that problem in the past.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you're really banging on all cylinders, really.
We're trying to, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's get to these rooms because, you know, as I said, you got to come down here to see this, and we're not going to give you all the details. So we'll create a little suspense for you. But can you sort of just walk us around the building, the theater of the mind here, and just tell us about the rooms?
Well, absolutely. When you come into our front door, again, you're walking into the original farmhouse portion that was built in 1857. And the bulk of our period rooms are in that part of the building. On the first floor, we have our music room, dining room, and parlor, and our gift shop is down there as well. And then when you pass through that into the first addition that was built for the county poor farm, which was built in 1861, that's our main exhibit hall. It's what I would refer to as a typical museum space, you know, display cases and, you know, proper cased displays. And then beyond that, we have what was originally built in 1900 as the kitchen and bake facilities for the poor farm. Which is now set up as a 19th century general store and a country kitchen. After that, on the first floor of our West Wing, which was built in 1886, we have that set up as a city main street. There are 10 rooms on that floor that are open to the public. It's along a long corridor, and it's set up as if you were walking down a main street in town and the different types of shops and places you would see. For example, we have a chapel, a clock repair shop, a woodworker's shop, you know, things like that set up in that hallway. Then when you come upstairs, again, we have the bedrooms for the farmhouse portion. We have this was a large farmhouse that would have had staff at the time. We have what would be set up as service rooms. And then we have a hodgepodge of exhibit rooms upstairs to include a 19th century barber shop, a Boy Scout room, a dollhouse room. And then we have our West Wing hallway upstairs, which serves as a local art gallery and has displays of some of our overflow items that we don't really have places for elsewhere in the museum.
And you have a lot of overflow stuff, right?
Yes, we do. We actually have an entire, well, the hallway we're in right now, the West Wing hallway, all the rooms on this floor, all 12 of them are storage rooms.
And I have to say, so when you took me around and you're showing me these rooms and I stuck my head in there, it's not just like a few items. I mean, there is stuff packed in there. And no matter where you look in a room, you see a comb, you see the barbershop, you see a little detail of something that mm-hmm. it's like, wow, what is that? You know, and what's this? And I mean, so you really stuffed a lot of artifacts.
Yeah, we're very lucky to be able to truly and completely portray a period room to include the little incidental items, like, you know, something like a little book somebody may have been reading and set down on a stand, or the 19th century stereo viewfinders. You know, we're very lucky to be able to completely outfit our period rooms appropriately.
And what I like about what you've done is that, you know, it's not just artifacts stuffed in there. As you're saying, there's choreography, right, mm-hmm. with the artifacts. It's like you are looking into a barbershop or a clockmaker shop. You have a clockworks there.
Yes. We want it to look like somebody was working and then just stepped out.
Yes.
That's more interesting than seeing a bunch of things that are, you know, in cases and framed on a wall. You don't get the same effect. We want our visitors to experience what it would have been like to someone in the 19th century.
Absolutely. And I think you do a great job.
I certainly appreciate that.
And that's your philosophy, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's how you see these museums working mm-hmm. best, right?
Oh, absolutely.
And do the visitors tell you? Do they give you that reinforcement?
We get a lot of positive feedback in that arena. A lot of positive feedback in that arena.
How important is it for your visitors to come and have an experience?
Oh, that's personally my number one goal. If you're not leaving here with having had an exceptional experience, we failed to do our jobs.
Oh.
A lot of museums are very cold and unwelcoming, if that makes any sense. You know, it's literally items in a case, lighting. We want this to be a warm and welcoming place. You know, this was once a family home. This was once a home for many, many people. And we still want to retain a little bit of that. So, you know, we don't want the cold atmosphere. We don't want it to be unwelcoming. We want people, especially the people in the community here, this to be a place they can celebrate as their heritage.
I think that heritage is really reflected in your museum. I mean, this is rural southwestern Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. Greene County is very rural. So you have a lot of farm life things. You have a lot of things that would be really indicative of rural life.
Mm-hmm.
And so that does reflect your heritage. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, where I'm from in Beaver County, it's very industrial.
Yeah.
So a lot of the museums there, they reflect industrial heritage. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what's beautiful about local history.
Yeah. Now, we have a lot of coal and oil stuff as well, because that was our big industry here.
Right, right. Again, that reflects your heritage here. That experience, you don't get that at big museums that aren't local history museums. If you go to Pittsburgh, for example, you're not going to see that sort of localized history. So when people come, do they have an experience that inspires them to come back and see more, or to go look up things or research things that they are made aware of?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, we get a lot of folks in here that are looking for specific items maybe that relate to their families. And we work very hand in hand with the local genealogical society as well. So we send a lot of cross traffic to each other, and we serve a similar mission, but it's different. They're more genealogy and family history, whereas we're more artifacts and archival documents. So we try to work very closely together with them, so that especially when people are traveling to this area to research, where they can get the full experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they can go there to Cornerstone and look up records, find names, do research on their families. And in many, many instances, they can actually come here and see photos, paintings of some of those people, items that belong to them in many cases, or items that they would have used and worked with. So we try to give that full spectrum experience, especially with our research visitors.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned to me that there is one other historical society in the area.
Yes, that's the Carmichael's Area Historical Society.
The Carmichael's. But other than that, you are really the hub of local history.
Well, and we actually, we have a very good working relationship with Carmichael's as well.
That's good. That's what it should be, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you loan your stuff out to anybody?
On a limited basis, we do. We like to know the organizations that we loan things out to.
Right. How big is Greene County here? For those who aren't here, this is southwestern Pennsylvania. It is very rural, but it's a large county.
I want to say that our population is around 58,000, but I could be wrong on that because I'm not sure where I'm pulling that number from. I know Waynesburg, the population of Waynesburg hovers around 6,000, maybe up to 7,000.
Oh, that's smaller than I thought.
Yeah, yeah. We're not a very large town.
Right. But you're also right next to West Virginia,
yes.
Right next to Ohio. You're not far from Maryland.
Hours drive.
So yeah, not only Pennsylvanians, Greene County folks, Pennsylvanians in this area, but you're proximity to other states.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so what was interesting to me, something you said earlier about how there's historically a lot of influence from Virginia, right? In the museum.
Well, this part of Pennsylvania prior to the Mason-Dixon line was actually claimed by Virginia. So a lot of the very early settlers here were actually coming here under the auspices of settling in Virginia.
Right. Which eventually became West Virginia.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
After the Civil War.
During the Civil War, 1863, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of interesting. That is so different from, you know, just 50, 60 miles north, the Pittsburgh area. It's a whole different universe, you know, historically, I think. You know.
Yeah. Well, I think we were a bit geographically isolated early on because of the rivers. And, of course, the Ohio country to our west was unsettled, really uncharted territory.
The frontier, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, the frontier. So I think we were kind of geographically isolated down the, you know, green Washington counties because of the rivers. And, you know, you have the Allegheny Mountains to the east. And we seem to have developed our own spin on Pennsylvania culture here. In fact, sometimes we seem to have more in common with the surrounding counties in West Virginia than we do the rest of the state.
Oh, really?
So we're sort of, and that even goes back to Native American times. You tend to find more Ohio culture and Native American artifacts represented here than you do of the more Pennsylvania cultures to the east. Not that, you know, our political boundaries meant anything to them then, but, you know, it seems like the geography of this region has really shaped it both, you know, culturally and physically over the last several thousand years, not just historically.
That is very interesting. You are very close to the Monongahela Valley and Monongahela primary cultures, right? I noticed in your archaeological collection down there, you had a lot of Monongahela artifacts.
We actually have quite an extensive collection of Monongahela artifacts.
You told me your oldest piece goes back. How old?
Yeah, we actually have a Clovis point in our collection that's in the neighborhood of 10 to 13,000 years old.
Wow.
And it was found locally.
And so when someone comes here, they're not only going to see 19th century, 20th century artifacts, but they're going to see some of this archaeological stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
You have hand tools and hunting tools and decorative things there. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We actually have a very unique and uncommon collection of Monongahela copper items. It's all trade copper, we believe, but it really isn't found elsewhere other than, you know, what was dug here in the 30s in this area. And that's the core of our collection.
Wow. So what are some of the challenges that you have going on?
The biggest challenge is this is a very large and very old building, and it requires a lot of maintenance, and maintenance isn't free.
No, it's not.
That is probably our biggest challenge, is just keeping up on this, because this is a very special building. It's a beautiful building, and it deserves to be cared for, and we try to do our best with that. So we're constantly, you know, raising funds and working on projects just to keep up on things and to improve things.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned you have a pretty good, solid volunteer staff, right? Do you ever have those sort of droughts in volunteers where you just, you know, hey, we need folks to come
We have
help?
In the past, but, you know, since I've come here and we've really tried to reinvent this place, bring it alive again, and we've been happily overwhelmed with volunteers and people willing to come out here and support what we do here. Because as I often like to remind people that, you know, we're not here as a museum just for people to come in and look at things. We're here to preserve the history of this area. And that history doesn't belong to us. That belongs to everyone. So when you're coming here and volunteering, you're not helping us. You're helping the entire county, because this is where we are. This is a representation of a couple hundred years of just our history and thousands of years of the history of this region.
I like that attitude. We're all in this together.
Mm-hmm.
This is our community museum, our history together, and we all have a responsibility to take care of that. Believe me, a lot of places don't have that. Vibe.
I'm aware of that.
Yeah.
And I think when you look at a place like this with that attitude, I think it's more successful. My goal is to engage the public, not just have them come here and take their money. You know, their money is what funds us to do all this. That's important. But what's more important is their experience here. Their experience here and connecting with their heritage.
Right. This is certainly for us here and now, but for future generations as well. So what we do now will be the legacy that our children and their children down the line will inherit. And that's a bit of a responsibility to do that, right? So you started in January. Well, there were people before you, and there were people before them, and then there will be someone after you after this. So continuity is a big thing.
Yes.
And I think that the longevity of your organization speaks to that continuity. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it hasn't always been easy, right?
As with any organization like this, there are struggles. Funding is always limited, you know, and we have to get creative with ways of raising funds. You know, you could give me $1 million today and I could have it spent by tomorrow and still need another million. Right, you know, that's just the nature of a place like this. In fact, I often say that our building is our biggest asset and our worst nightmare all rolled into one, because we have an amazing collection and we have an amazing space to show it off. And a great building just to walk around in and for people to hang out in, but it takes a lot of money to support and maintain that. So we do lots of fundraising. We do lots of events, and you know, we do all that to keep this place alive.
Part of what you're doing interests me very much, mm-hmm. and that's your outreach using media.
Yes.
So you started a YouTube series, mm-hmm. right? Explain that a little bit.
Myself, personally, I think things are more interesting when you know stuff about it. You know, I could have turned you loose in this museum and you could have walked around. You would have probably enjoyed yourself. But when you actually get information and history behind something, that makes it much more interesting. And our YouTube series kind of does, we go two different directions on that. One is some of the episodes we will talk about like a specific artifact and give history on that and how it's relevant to the county and our mission here. We also do field excursions on those. And those are my favorite. And I think those seem to be the ones that we get the best feedback on. Our first one, actually, we had gone on a several hour hike through the woods to find a long forgotten family cemetery. It was a wonderful time. It was well received. And we did find the graves. And, you know, it was the Launce family that was from down the road in Kirby. And the graves dated to the middle of the 19th century. You know, it led to people doing some research on that. And it was something the entire community really seemed to enjoy.
And, you know, with this media, it truly has worldwide reach,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, those videos will be watched around the world.
Mm-hmm.
So you're bringing your corner of the world here to just about anybody who can tune in with mm-hmm. internet access there. So how are those YouTube videos received?
Oh, people love them.
Yeah?
People absolutely love them. We love them here. It's a very fun project for us to do. And I think the fact that we're having fun with it kind of makes it better for the folks that are watching that at home.
Yeah.
You know, but no, everyone seems to love it. And we keep getting asked, you know, when's your next video coming out and stuff like that. So we try to keep up on that as much as possible.
Yeah.
And it's another way to bring history to you in your home. You know, a lot of times it brings people back here because we usually have, you know, our field trips, we usually have stuff here that's related to that. And of course, the artifact videos we do, people love coming here and actually getting to see that stuff in person.
And that's really the goal, right? I mean, mm-hmm. you definitely want to share the knowledge, and this media is one way that you could do that. But, you know, you really want people to come here.
Yeah.
See this stuff, talk with you, talk with your staff,
mm-hmm.
You know, really experience this stuff up close. And that's really the best way to experience history.
Absolutely. History is tangible. I really enjoy hands-on stuff. Like, you know, with our school groups and stuff like that, I have a small collection of arrowheads that I actually, you know, ancient artifacts that I'll let kids handle and look at, because that's what creates that spark. You know, that's what turns a kid on to something and like, wow, I really think this is interesting, you know, and then maybe someday they'll end up being an archaeologist or, you know, that's where you develop these interests and relationships and stuff like that. And I think that's important.
Let's talk about that a little bit. Kids' sense of history.
Mm-hmm.
What they know and how they feel about history. What's your sense of the state of history education today?
I think it's really good. We get lots of school groups through here, and the kids love it. And actually, they're the ones that ask the best questions and the most challenging questions sometimes, the one that make you think, I don't have an answer to that. But, you know, let's go find out. Let's go look it up in a book or, you know, find these records and we'll figure that out. Let's learn something.
Right.
You know, and they seem to love that.
Do you find that kids come and they're prepared about history?
Many times, yes.
They are?
Many times, yes.
Wow, that's very encouraging.
Our schools down here are great.
Knowledgeable about local history?
Yes. Oh, very much so. In fact, that's where I developed my interest in local history, was when I actually came to this place in my third grade class.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there you go.
Yeah.
Right? The continuity.
Absolutely.
And maybe, you know, 30, 40, 50 years, someone will say the same thing. Mm-hmm. And they'll be director.
Absolutely. I mean, I would like to add that, you know, another thing that kind of brought me to this job is my family has been in this area for well over 200 years. So I have a lot of personal familial connections to this place and some of the artifacts in it. So, you know, I truly do love this place. Truly do love this place.
Reenacting, right? That's another thing that it's an experience. Mm-hmm. It's three-dimensional history. You're a reenactor, right?
Yes.
And you have it reenacting here on the grounds.
Yes, we try to bring reenactments in here as much as we possibly can. We do lots of Civil War reenacting, and in the fall for some of our events, we actually have some French and Indian War reenactors that come down.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, actually, Clay Kilgore, who's the director of the Washington County Historical Society, is with the 1st Virginia, and they're, you know, that time period, and they come down here and reenact.
Mm.
And we also have the 140th, which is a Civil War unit, and my unit, the 31st, that reenacts here quite a bit, too.
So what kind of events do you have here on the grounds?
This year, in August, we have our Stone to Steel event coming up, which is it's a Native American Heritage Weekend. And we actually have a group of Native American reenactors that comes down with that. And then in October, we have our annual Harvest Festival, which this will be our 49th. And that's really just a celebration of the culture here. We have vendors with local food, traditional items like that, Civil War reenactors, French and Indian War reenactors. We actually set the cabin up back here as a tavern. Next year, we're looking into doing a lot of different stuff. We will keep our Harvest Festival. We'll keep Stone to Steel. We're looking into doing some things that are, again, this is a rural region. Hunting is very, very much a part of our culture down here. We're looking at having an event themed towards that, specifically around raccoon, fox, and rabbit hunting with dogs, because that's something that, you know, people still do here that we've been doing for, you know, hundreds of years, and we want to bring a little bit of that into this place.
Mm.
Because again, as something else I always say, is history isn't something that stopped 100 years ago that we look back on. History's happening today.
Yeah.
You know, so the stuff we need to do today, we want to bring into this place and preserve that now so that it's here for future generations.
History is now.
Yes.
As I always say.
Exactly.
It's happening right now. What happens today, tomorrow will be history, right? For sure. Well, that reminds me of something that I often find missing in museums, and that is living history.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that is like oral histories mm-hmm. or contemporary history. If something happens out in the community, you are there, you're gathering that information, you're documenting, that becomes parts of your collection.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Heinz History Center was remarkably on this when the synagogue shooting happened some months ago. They were asking the community, give us things like mm-hmm. documents and records of this contemporary event. Do you do any of that sort of work?
Oh, we do actually. In fact, a lot of our donations are items like that. And we've been getting things like that for decades. That's a large portion of our archival library, actually, are people's firsthand accounts or remembrances of experience that not only happened here, but national events as well.
Yeah. Could you imagine? You know, if you had a recording of somebody when Pearl Harbor happened, right? I mean, that's very like, oh, that's so historical. But if you went out with a microphone downtown Waynesburg and you said, hey, what are you doing today? You know, a reaction to current events.
And 100 years from now, that's the type of history that people will really want.
Exactly.
Is that personal, individual experience.
That's right.
You know, because otherwise history is dates and times.
Yeah.
And that's boring.
Yeah.
That's boring. How did it affect someone? What did it make you think? What did it make you feel? That's real history.
Absolutely. And that's, you know, that's three-dimensional history mm-hmm. there. You know, the catalog of events, the dates, names, whatever. But people's reactions, the affective,
mm-hmm.
right, involved in history, that often gets left out.
Yes.
And, you know, you think about it, well, how do you capture that, right? How does that get preserved?
Well, I think it's the job of places like us, this to preserve that history. And I think that's best done at the local level. Because, you know, we're a community here. We experience things as a community here. And how we may receive something may be different than, you know, what somebody outside of Philadelphia or Reno, Nevada may experience something else. So I think that's best done at the local level. And I think it's the job of regional historical societies to preserve that information.
Taking care of the local.
Yes,
right? Yeah.
Exactly.
I often say, look, the Library of Congress is not going to come in and preserve your local history.
No, they're not.
Right?
They're
Heinz
not.
History Center in Pittsburgh, which is an amazing organization, they're not going to come down here and preserve your history.
Mm-hmm.
It's up to you.
Absolutely.
Not just you. It's up to the community, right?
Yes, yes.
You feel good about that here?
I do. The support we get from the community is nothing short of amazing. This has become a place that I think everyone in the county really, really looks to as the place that preserves their history. We're the key to their past.
Absolutely. Well, let's get people down here. Tell folks how they can find you.
Our website, greenecountyhistory.org, and Facebook, Green County Historical Society Museum. We actually keep our Facebook page very, very active, not only with the events we have coming up, But what we're working on out here constantly, be it a research project, be it repairs to the building, you know, our train is currently on the agenda right now, our 1916 locomotive. We keep our Facebook updated with what's going on with that. On every Thursday, I do an Artifact of the Week post where we pick something from the museum, do a little write-up about that. And it's a very wide array of topics. It could be something as simple as that TV, for example, and, you know, what it's about. But I always try to bring it back into how whatever item it is was relevant then and now, and how it plays into where we've been, not as a museum, but as a county, where we've been and where we're going.
And this brings us back to what we were saying earlier about, using media
mm-hmm.
to do that kind of outreach with what you have, your programming here. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could do this stuff. You could set up downstairs and hope people walk through the door and, hey, look at this Artifact of the Week. But the fact that you're out there on social media, on your website.
If people don't know we exist, they won't come here.
Exactly. Well, physically, where is this place?
We are at 918 Rolling Meadows Road in Waynesburg, Pennsylvania, just less than a mile off of Route 21.
And I-79. It's very close.
Yeah.
So it's easy to find.
Oh, very easy to find.
Yeah. Matt, thanks so much.
Oh, thank you.
I'd love to have these conversations, and I think they're really important to have these kinds of conversations. You know, this is a bit of a meta view mm-hmm. of local history work, you know, and I like to talk to directors and those who are involved to get these insights, not only about what you're doing, but how you feel about your work, your philosophy on things, your experiences. I think that's very important, mm-hmm. and I think it's really important for the public to know that this stuff just doesn't happen. People like you, very dedicated, very passionate, you work very hard to make this happen.
Yes, and it's not just me. I have an amazing board of directors, and really, we're beginning to experience a lot of success down here. And really, that's all our volunteers. They've put in so many long hours, long days, and so much hard work to make this place what it is right now, because 6 months ago, it wasn't quite this good. So we really, really cannot thank our volunteers enough, because we just would not be able to do this without them.
And knowing all that, I always think there's a value proposition in mm-hmm. almost everything. If you out there value local history, support your local history organization. If you value Greene County Historical Society, by all means, donate, volunteer, get involved.
Absolutely.
Thanks so much, Matt.
Oh, thank you.
You are listening to a production of the Social Voice Podcast Network.
You can do anything with podcasting. It's great because there's no rules.
Yeah.
That's the cool thing. We do really nice work. Mm-hmm. You know, so much podcasting is crap.
Yeah.
Just crap, right? It's amateur hour.
Yeah.
And that's not what we do.
Well, that's good. Yeah. That's good.
But I wanted to use this here opportunity to introduce you, give you a chance to talk about this wonderful place. And I wonder if I should change my batteries. No. I'll get a beep, I'm sure. Yeah. I'll see it go off, that's for sure. Okay. All right. Yeah. There we go. That works now. Okay. It's really strange. Okay. So, as I was saying, I'm sort of scatterbrained on this. All right, you ready?
Yeah.
Okay. That's good. That'll be good.
Excellent.
That'll be good.
And your batteries didn't die.